All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Lawrence B. Hagel presiding. All who have business before this court draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. You may be seated.
The techies are getting their equipment ready. I have my notepad right here.
Well, good morning, everyone. We're here this morning to hear the case of Klein versus the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. Who will speak for Mr. Klein?
Klein appears by Kenneth Carpenter.
Thank you. And who will speak for the Secretary?
Chauncey Hageman for the Secretary, if he is with us there.
Okay, thank you. Now, I'll ask you, both sides, if they just speak up a little bit when you get to the podium, because I have difficulty hearing you sometimes. Thank you. Mr. Carpenter?
May it please the court, Kenneth Carpenter appearing on behalf of Mr. Philip Klein. The board in this case conceded that the information provided by USCAR.
Did you want to reserve any time?
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Excuse me. I would like to reserve 10 minutes.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Please make it so. Okay.
As I was indicating, the board in this case conceded that the information provided by USCAR, in this case in July of 2005, likely was the type of information contemplated by 38 CFR 3.156C1. And that is found at page 13 of the RBA. The board, however, made a finding of fact that at the time of the VA's 1993 decision, sufficient information did not exist in order to identify or and obtain the service records that were in part relied upon to grant the May 6, 1999 claim for service connection for PTSD. That's at the record at 5. The board, however, was mistaken in this finding of fact. There was, in fact, sufficient information, and the administrative error of which occurred was the VA's failure to follow up based upon the initial information that was provided by Mr. Klein in order to clarify the information that he had provided. As the record in this case demonstrates, if the VA had done so, as they eventually did in 2003, then the information would have been corroborated and those service records would have been obtained based upon the providing of the identity of the individual who had drowned that was part of the same unit that Mr. Klein was assigned to. In the
Counselor, may I interject at this juncture?
Yes, John.
You're talking about the 93 claim, the initial claim. Right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And on record 1906, your client, Mr. Klein, says, I was in Vietnam between August of 1970 and April of 71.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And that's the information that the VA had to go on at that time.
Correct.
And your client did not have a diagnosis of PTSD at that time.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that, Your Honor. I believe he did have a diagnosis. The examining physician said that the condition was likely PTSD and a mild case of PTSD, but the diagnosis was rejected.
Excuse me. What page of the record is that on? Would you read the portion that you're speaking of?
No, I think the VA is. I believe, Your Honor, we'll find that in the record at 757 to 762.
Okay. And the portion that you're speaking of about having a mild case of PTSD?
Yes, I'm getting to that, Your Honor.
Okay. Take your time.
It's at page 61 in the concluding paragraph under diagnosis, and at least on my copy as printed, part of it is difficult to read at the far left margin, but it says in the concluding sentence, final sentence, I would conclude that Mr. Klein may very well have a past case of mild PTSD.
Have what? A past case?
Oh, a past case, right.
And I think, if I understood you correctly, you said in response to Judge Lance's question that he then had a mild case of PTSD.
Well, if I did, I misspoke, Your Honor. He was diagnosed with PTSD, or excuse me, had been diagnosed with or considered, was considered by the VA examiner to have had.
Apparently.
Yes, apparently.
And your client's representation to the VA at that time was that I was in Vietnam between August of 70, April of 71, and there was a civilian who drowned that is a stressor.
Well, Your Honor, I think it's fair to say that the information in response to the form was confusing. There is a reference to a civilian, but there is also a reference to the person involved was part of his unit. There seemed to be contradictory or at least inconsistent statements in trying to respond to this form. It is evident, in my view, that Mr. Klein simply did not understand what was being asked of him. But there was a characterization, you're correct, that it was described as a friend.
And we're all in agreement that the individual who drowned, who was indeed part of his unit,
yes,
was Robert Harrison Clifton.
That's correct, John.
Who drowned October 23rd, 1971.
Correct.
Which is months after your client claimed to have been in Vietnam.
Yeah, in that report, that's correct.
In that report, okay. Yes. So in 1993, we are under the Morton versus West well-grounded claim approach to the VA's duty to assist. Would you agree with that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So can you address those issues? Based upon the information provided, the absence of a current PTSD diagnosis, the fact that the information provided by the claimant certainly could not be accurate. They couldn't have found a record of a drowning of Specialist Clifton because he did not drown prior to your client's representation that he left Vietnam in April of 1971.
Well, Your Honor, regardless of my client's representation, the question is whether he was or wasn't in Vietnam on that date. And obviously the VA eventually found, based upon his service records, that he was, and that what controls here is the content of the service records, not the content, of Mr. Klein's recollection of the time period of his service. And more importantly, we're talking here not about whether or not the 1993 decision was correctly decided. It likely was correctly decided. This is not an issue of clear and unmistakable error. This is an issue of whether or not Mr. Klein is entitled to the remedial benefit of the VA's regulation at 3.156C. And that regulation under now subsection 1 clearly was implicated and was conceded by the board to be the kind of information that would have allowed for and required a reconsideration of that 1993 claim. So it's the reconsideration that is at issue here, and the exception under subparagraph 2 of C is whether or not there was sufficient information provided.
Wouldn't that be predicated upon the BA's duty to assist?
I don't.
What duty did they have in 1993 to delve into these records further without a diagnosis currently of PTSD?
With all due respect, Your Honor, I do not believe that this is related to the duty to assist per se. It certainly has overlap of the duty to assist. But when we're talking about 3.156C...
Well, no, wait a minute. In your previous comment, you said that the VA had an obligation to look at the service records and go back and find these things.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. If I phrased it that way, that was not my intent. What I meant to say is that the record demonstrates that had they done so, had they made an additional inquiry of Mr. Klein, then they would have gotten the information in 1993 that they got 10 years later in 2003 by simply querying as to whether or not, based upon the information that they had had received, whether this did or did not deal with a fellow service member, and if so, what was his name? One of the bases that the board relied upon was that the name was represented not to have been available, and therefore they couldn't have found it. In fact, in 2003, Mr. Klein provided that information to the VA, and when that information was provided, they were able to corroborate the stressor of the drowning of service member Clifton.
I'm curious about precisely what duty did the VA have, what is the source of that duty precisely?
I do not believe, Your Honor, that this is an issue of duty. This is a question of whether or not the exception...
They said they had to reconsider as opposed to assist. So, okay. What is the source of your allegation, or Mr. Klein's allegation, that they had to reconsider?
The obligation to reconsider the 1993 claim is required by the plain language of subsection 1. Subsection 1 says that the VA will consider a claim notwithstanding paragraph A of this section, and the preceding phrase is, if the VA receives or associates with the claims file relevant service department records that existed and had not been associated with the claims file when the VA first decided the case. That's what the board conceded applied here, that the VA had received that information.
Right, I understand, but the information provided at that time, at the initial,
in 1993.
The initial filing in 1993, was that a civilian had drowned. That's what the VA had, correct? So what would require the VA to take that information and somehow look for the information that eventually led to a grant of service connection?
In 1993, there was no such duty. This case is about a later exception to the rule established in 3.156C by the VA in September of 2006. That exception says that the obligation of the VA to reconsider when it receives service department records will not exist if there was not sufficient information provided by the veteran. So what the board was required to do, what this court is required to do, is to look back and determine what existed at that time and whether or not the exception does or does not apply. And what I'm saying...
So we are to interpret the 2006 regulation as what?
Well, I think the first question is whether or not the 2006 regulation applies to a decision that was made by the VA in February of 2006 when the regulation did not go into place until September of 2006.
Okay, well, do you believe it has any application in this case then? Are you saying that the regulation applied retroactively or not?
It did not apply retroactively.
Okay, and how, upon what basis did the board decide this case?
On the basis that it did apply the amended regulation and that they were going to apply the exception retroactively.
Right. So, in effect, the VA made its decision on a regulation that did not exist and which you argue is not retroactive. So wouldn't that mean that we would just have to remand this case so that the VA could apply the appropriate regulation that existed at that time and determine whether or not that would grant the individual benefits?
That is certainly an option for this panel. The other option...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, the other option for this panel is to find, as the board did, that the regulation did apply retroactively.
Well, but you just said it did not.
Oh, no, well, absolutely.
Okay.
I do not believe it.
If it did not apply...
If it did not, then you're absolutely correct.
Okay,
then
and that's your argument, I take it, right? That it did not apply.
Yes.
Okay, but if that's your argument and the board decided it on another regulation, then why shouldn't we just send it back to the board and say, hey, you used the wrong regulation. Now, you take a look at these facts under the correct regulation, analyze them, and come back. Why would that not be an appropriate result?
I think that is the appropriate result in this case. However, Your Honor, in the event that this panel would find that the board was correct, then we are addressing how that regulation was incorrectly applied by the board when they applied it, when they relied upon the exception in this case.
If they relied on the wrong regulation, all then that makes no difference. Correct?
I absolutely agree, Your Honor.
Good morning, Mr. Carpenter.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Is it your position that all information that needed to be included on the form to identify the drowned member was included in 1993?
I'm not sure I would go quite that far. What I'm suggesting is that based upon having had Mr. Klein's reported stressors, based upon having had his service department records and his unit assigned, and based upon the confusing and inconsistent statements that he made, that had the VA asked a clarifying question, that being the same clarifying question that they asked in 2003, what was the name of the individual? It's clear from the request in 2001 that the board made that the board had translated all of this information into identifying that it was a service member and not a civilian that had drowned. And then they made the specific request in 2001, which was provided by Mr. Klein in 2003 and then corroborated by USCAR in 2003, that in fact service member Clifton had drowned while on active duty and was a member of the same unit as Mr. Klein, and that was the basis for the grant in this case.
Right. Do you have handy the record at 1920?
I do, Your Honor.
Okay, and could you take a look at question number 17?
Yes, Your Honor.
And would you mind reading that question and the answer?
Question is, did you have civilian friends killed, wounded, or executed? If not, skip to the next question. If yes, then there are A through F answers. And A said, tell us about the incident. Friend was drowned and / was wounded. B, it was reported to military authorities. Yes. What unit participated in the incident? And he describes the 25th Infantry and 3rd of the 7th Cavalry, I believe is the correct 17th. Statement there. D, the U.S. unit, it was reported to, I'm not sure I can tell you what that is.
But would you conclude that the implication is that this was a friend associated with his military unit as opposed to a civilian friend?
Your Honor, quite candidly, I have no idea how to read that.
Okay.
I that's why I say the information that was provided was at best inconsistent as to what the nature of this relationship is. But the relevant point is that, at least according to this, it was reported to military authorities and identified the specific unit that was participated in. That seems to me to be the underlying basis for the request to be made to the service department. Now, had the request to the service department been made in 1993 based upon this, and they came back with a null response, then I think that, assuming, which I do not assume, but conceding for the moment that the amended version of the regulation applies, well, then clearly that would be problematic for Mr. Klein if the amended regulation applied.
But is it your position that the information on that form was sufficient for the VA to conduct an appropriate search and discover who, in fact, may have drowned with that unit within the relevant time period?
I am not certain that this information would have been sufficient to initiate that support. What I'm suggesting is that had they made additional inquiry of Mr. Klein based upon this information, then they would have gotten the sufficient information to clarify this to make such a report. And if, in fact, that report went in, and no request was made, Your Honor, so we're speculating here about what this might mean and what the VA might have done and what the response might have been, but given those three hypotheticals, then that could have been problematic had such a request and inquiry been made.
Is it your position that a name is always necessary?
No.
You don't believe a name is always necessary?
No, I do not believe a name is always necessary.
There can be other identifying information
such as the unit,
there.
The circumstances that are described. In this case, for instance, Your Honor, a drowning. It would seem to me that an inquiry, a generic inquiry, as to whether or not during the period of active duty service of Mr. Klein, were there any reported drownings associated with his unit? Just drownings. Not name, not service member, not civilian. Just drownings.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Your time is up.
We'll thank you very
have
much.
10 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Shanti Hageman, counsel for the secretary. With me at counsel's table is Rebecca Baird, Deputy Assistant General Counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. Appellant is not entitled to an effective date prior to May 6, 1999 for his service-connected PTSD. To that end, the Secretary will demonstrate that the Board's findings were sound with respect to Regulation 3.156C and the stressor at issue, and that the Board properly applied clarified 3.156C to this claim. This claim hinges upon whether there was administrative deficiency in 1993 and any failure to cooperate. And Your Honor asked Appellant's counsel what the source was for VA's obligations extant 1993, and the source in the era of well-grounded claims was CFR 3.159 A and B. In Mr. Klein's case, at the time of the original claim, VA did not have the information that it later used to corroborate his drowning stressor, and appellant did not supply sufficient identifying information to verify the drowning of his friend. As was discussed, appellant was afforded an examination in 1993 where the examiner stated with certainty that appellant did not manifest any significant symptoms of PTSD.
Ms. Hageman, in your brief, you seem to make or use a lot of ink on the point that the name of the drowned individual was not provided. Is it your position that it's necessary to have the name in order to conduct a proper record search?
Today, not necessarily, under the duty to assist, which didn't apply in 1993, VA would likely do follow up and send upon a letter informing him that we needed sufficient information. But in the era of well-grounded claims, any additional development beyond what was done in this case would have stopped after the examination failed to yield a PTSD diagnosis under Morton and 3.159.
Now, if I could follow up and ask the same question that I asked Mr. Klein's counsel. Why would we not send this case back for the board to analyze all the things that you're arguing right now, since they applied a regulation that did not in fact exist when they decided, at the time relevant to their decision?
It's the Secretary's position that the newer version of 3.156 is a mere clarification of the pre-existing version, and appellant's counsel, as the board's decision reflects, argued under Vigil and argued under the newer version of the rule, and if it's not a mere clarification, Secretary contends that it is a mere clarification, but there weren't any expectations under the prior version of 3.156C, which required that military authorities misplaced the records or that they were committed in error in the beginning.
Well, as I look at the prior version, it doesn't place any limitation on the information provided to the Secretary. And all it says is that if records, official records, are provided to the Secretary or associated with the claims file without time limitation, then those records must be considered. There is no statement about that if there is sufficient information given. And so what you argue, it may be true or not true, isn't that something for the board to analyze given the facts in this case? Because it will have to make some sort of factual finding, it seems to me.
Given the facts in this case, and the fact that the older version of the regulation was never asserted until any preclusive retroactive effect was briefly alluded to in the reply brief, it seems that appellant has wanted to avail himself under the arm of C1 without taking into account C2.
Well, if he's arguing the first version, am I understanding correctly, or?
In his substantive appeal to the board, which you can glean from the board's decision, he argued Vigil and he argued 3.156C1, the new version, the clarified version of the rule. And with it in the back of this case, the regulation does not have a preclusive retroactive effect because the nature and extent, as evidenced by the regulatory history, is minimal. The claimant always had the duty to provide sufficient identifying information for VA to go and corroborate stressors. That is heightened in the more restricted
language,
Your Honor.
That's the difference between Service Department records and other information under the earlier regulations, if not, that there is no necessarily a duty, but if it happens that the service department records become associated with the claims file, then the VA, I think the regulation said may, and that's another issue,
right.
But the VA then has to reconsider, and then it has to reconsider all of the information in the file. Now, if in fact you, I know I'm kind of going on here, but if in fact that's correct, then why is Mr. Klein's, why do we not have to send this matter back to the board to make the all of the interim factual determinations necessary to, you know, determine if that was enough?
I understand your question, Your Honor. In this case, even irrespective of applying old 3.156C or current 3.156C, there is absolutely nothing in the record until February 2000 to suggest that he had PTSD. So any sort of retroactive evaluation would be futile. And to assist the veteran in a retroactive development, there still needs to be a reasonable possibility that such development or adjudication would substantiate his claim.
Let me follow that up a little bit. Assuming even that there was no diagnosis, firm diagnosis of PTSD prior to, what, 99, or I'm sorry, when?
February 2000.
What if that diagnosis, if the absent diagnosis up to that time was due to a lack of verified stressor? And now the VA says, son of a gun, we do have a stressor. It is verified, and therefore we're going to grant service connection. In other words, well, anyway, I'm sorry, I don't want to go on.
No, Your Honor. Well, with all due respect, that is not the case, the facts of this case.
How do we know?
Because
he didn't have a diagnosis earlier. He has a diagnosis in 2000. PTSD, in order to be diagnosed, has, I don't know, six or seven criteria, not just one. So how do we know that the only reason that this individual was diagnosed with PTSD now was all of a sudden we have a verified stressor when, as the VA concedes, I think, that stressor actually occurred when he said it occurred. Yeah, do you understand that question, or am I being unclear?
No, you're not being unclear. In this case, this wasn't really an issue that was explored too fully in the briefs. There are...
Okay, now let me again stop you there.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm sorry to keep interjecting, not letting you finish your answer, but... But assuming everything I said was true,
okay,
and I think most of it was, it all in the record, wouldn't that mean we would have to send it back to the boards for them to do something like, say, for example, you know what, we need to go back and find out why the individual was not diagnosed with PTSD. Was it based solely on no stressor, or was it based on the fact that some of these other six or seven elements were not met? That would make a big difference in this case, wouldn't it? Because this argument here is all about stressor.
Yes, Your Honor, but there is nothing in this case. And in 1993, the examiner unequivocally rejected PTSD diagnosis based on the symptoms, and he acknowledged the stressors. The rating decision in 1993 denied the claim due to a lack of a PTSD diagnosis, not due to a lack of stressors.
But again, if there are six or seven elements, I'm sorry, I don't remember how many, and that initial, before 2000, the diagnosis was not made. Okay, in 1993, the person says it appears that there was a mild case. Let's say that the reason that the individual, the doctor, made that determination was because He didn't show anxiety. He didn't have, flashbacks. He, didn't have, dreams that, that caused him to think of his time in Vietnam. Let's say it was one of those factors. Then a stressor would be irrelevant, right?
Yes. Yeah,
because you wouldn't need a stressor. It makes no difference, stressor or not. Okay, again, let me go back to my question. That's a fact, correct? And we don't determine facts. The board determines facts. So why, even on the record we have, why shouldn't we remand it to the board? And I'll accept your answer now. I won't ask you any more questions.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's the Secretary's position that there's the record is silent, and this issue didn't come up, but there are other records of physical examinations of the record that show as late as 1997 and 1998 that he was emotionally normal. But I'm not going to go there, because that wasn't. So I'm just going to quickly go through the Princess Cruises sure. test. As a mere clarification, this was not a substantive change, so the nature and extent of the change was minimal or insubstantial. As for the relationship to the past event, the Secretary identifies the past event since we're dealing with 3.156 as the claim to reopen. Appellant hasn't pointed to anything he would have done differently in 1999. And as for fair notice and settled expectations, merely clarifying how these claims were the new version of the regulation is merely clarifying how the claims were evaluated all along. And if appellant was relying on the plain text of the prior regulation, nothing in the prior wording gives rise to the expectation of an earlier effective date. And appellant has consistently asserted that the clarified version of the regulation applies. I made that point earlier, that this only came up in the reply brief. He's cherry-picking from the new version of the regulation, and to employ C1 without C2 would be to ignore the intent of the clarified regulation. Its promulgation does not have a preclusive retroactive effect to the facts of this claim, facts of this case. And if your honors have no further questions, the Secretary will conclude.
Thank you, counsel. Talk to me a little bit, if you would, please, about the duty to assist as it existed in 93.
Okay.
Claimant says, I think I have problems as a result of being a witness to or learning of a guy by the name of Butch, who I thought was a civilian, who drowned while I was in Vietnam, which was August of 70 to April of 71. So at that point in time, did the Secretary have the obligation to research all civilians who drowned in Vietnam during this time frame? Now, if he did, that time frame doesn't correspond to the actual loss of Specialist 4 Clifton, which was in October of 1971. And going back to the theory that the duty to assist is not a one-way street, can you address those issues for me, please?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. The duty to assist is not a one-way street, and again, the Secretary's obligations at that time were derived from 3.159 Morton. To trigger VA assistance, appellant had to present evidence of a well-grounded claim. Once we provided the examination that acknowledged the stressors but rejected the PTSD diagnosis, due to a lack of symptoms, any of the symptoms, was a pre-DSM-4, but it was a clear opinion that appellant did not have PTSD at the time of that diagnosis, the duty to assist ended. And the regulatory history for 3.156C notes that the duty to assist and 3.156C are not coextensive because 3.156C predates the duty to assist.
Well, now, would your analysis be different if the claimant back in 1993 would have said, a member of my unit, whose name was Robert Harrison Clifton, drowned while on active duty?
It's hard to prognosticate as to how this would have been developed back then, because we did provide the examination, and I think it would depend on the timing of things, but in 1993, when the development scheme was hitched to 3.159, we likely wouldn't have done, the obligation would have ended once the PTSD diagnosis was explicitly rejected due to symptoms. Might be different if the examiner had rejected.
My point is that counsel is arguing that someone should have asked additional questions and someone should have searched military records. It's arguable that if you know the unit and know the individual's name, there may have been maybe not a legal obligation, but one of general inquiry as to a drowning that took place within the unit. However, if an individual says a civilian drowned,
right,
what obligation does the VA or anybody have to keep records of a civilian drowning?
Zero. I'm sorry if I made that a more convoluted
answer
than it
is. So it's based upon the information provided by the claimant that may accelerate the obligation of the VA.
Yes, Your Honor. And that's how we do our development.
And in response to Judge Davis's question, I believe counsel read that, that we're talking about possibly the 25th Division, and we're talking about, I believe it's the 17th Cavalry, not the 7th Cavalry, that was involved, which are pretty big outfits. But you're looking for a civilian by the name of Butch who died.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right.
Yes, and the obligation to assist was more restrictive back then than it is under the VCAA.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying.
I promise not to ask you any more questions, but that's for the question prompted my...
Mm-hmm.
If the earlier version of the regulation applied, where do you find a duty to assist or no duty to assist or any talking about assist in the initial, in the first version, the earlier version of the regulation?
Of 3.156C. Mm-hmm. I was alluding to the regulatory history that said that was making that distinction that there wasn't a duty to assist.
Okay, but your argument is based upon the fact that the later version was merely a clarification of the initial version, and so they really are the same thing.
Yes, but it incorporated our longstanding, well-established practice of requiring a claimant to provide certain identifying information.
Okay, and so I guess your position is that, if I understand it correctly, the Secretary's position is that because the later version merely clarified what the VA always did, because Mr. Klein did not provide sufficient information, as I think Judge Lance clearly stated, then the VA would not have any reason to do anything else, even though the records were later associated with the claims file.
Yes, Your Honor, because the development schemes were entirely different. So, if Your Honors have no further questions?
Oh, we have a couple more.
Okay.
What is it, counsel, from your perspective, that made the difference in the reconsideration decision, I guess, after 2000? We had a finding of no PTSD, can't identify the stressors, or based on the symptoms, no PTSD, and then something happens that changed that totally. What was it?
It was the provisional diagnosis of PTSD in February 2000. That's how we calculated the earliest effective date that, in our view, the earliest effective date possible in this case is May 6, 1999, the date of the original claim. And he came forth with the February 2000 PTSD diagnosis, and then we undertook the development and eventually got to the right place.
We have no further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors. Can I conclude really quickly? May I conclude very quickly? Based on the pertinent law and undisputed facts, the court should affirm on all the issues. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel?
May it please the court, I'd like to clarify a few things about the facts as they existed in 1993. I direct the court's attention to RBA at 1906, which is a statement in support of claim signed by Mr. Klein, dated, I believe it's January 21st, 1993. And in the first two statements, after, in the space provided following, statement is made in connection with a claim for benefits in a case of the above named veteran. It says, parens 1, please furnish me with a full copy of my U.S. Army service medical records. 2, please accept this as my intent to file for service connected PTSD due to service in the Republic of Vietnam, August 1970 to April 1971, parens approximate dates, period. This would include establishing exposure to Agent Orange or any residuals of that exposure. There is a third paragraph, but it doesn't have to do with the facts of this case. Then I would direct the court's attention to the record at 753, which is the first page of the June 23, 1993 rating decision. The first sentence indicates that the veteran's service record shows that he served in the Republic of Vietnam as a job specialty 11B-20 light weapons infantry from August 10, 1971 to March 18, 1972. So it's clear that the VA at the time of its rating decision knew that Mr. Klein was in fact on active duty at the time of the later verification of service member Clifton's death. It also indicates that in conjunction with his claim, the veteran has indicated that he received door gunner training while he was in the United States. He does not indicate serving as a door gunner in the Republic of Vietnam. He states his aircrew activity and maintenance. He states that he was subject to sniper attacks and that he did serve as a convict guard. He states that he went to Vietnam as an infantryman, was subsequently involved in helicopter mechanics. He states that one friend drowned, one was wounded while he was over there, and his statements to his psychiatrist, he states that part of the time he served as a colonel's aide. He said they nearly daily took rocket and mortar attacks from the enemy and witnessed many individuals being wounded, maimed, killed, and on a couple of occasions, he actually shot Vietnamese non-military personnel. So clearly the VA was informed and recorded in their rating decision, not just a reference to a friend named Butch at a time in which Mr. Klein was not on active duty service. They knew that a person had drowned. Now, it is clear that the information provided later by Mr. Klein was confusing. And I did not finish in my response to Judge Davis. Question 17F specifically asks how many civilians were involved, and the response is zero. So clearly we have inconsistent information having been provided here. And this is not about the VA's duty to assist. This is about whether or not the VA is entitled to utilize the exception that was created in September of 2006. That exception did not exist in February of 2006 when they assigned the effective date. That was the basis for the board's determination that he was not entitled to the benefit of reconsideration of his 1993 claim.
Mr. Carpenter, what about the secretary's position that there was no PTSD diagnosis?
The fact that there was no PTSD diagnosis has nothing to do with the application of 3.156C. 3.156C requires reconsideration based upon the receipt of supplemental service department records. That's what happened. There is no guarantee that Mr. Klein will, upon reconsideration, get an effective date back to 1993. That effective date has to be based upon competent medical evidence. If there isn't competent medical evidence that he suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder from 1993 to 1999, then he's not entitled to compensation. But he is entitled under 3.156C to the reconsideration of his 1993 claim because the VA in 2003 received service department records that they had not previously obtained and were previously available. One final point on the question of retroactivity. The limitation imposed by 3.156C2 is a substantive change. It is simply disingenuous for the VA to suggest that the limitation that existed after September of 2006 does not preclude the application of the regulation. There was no preclusive provision in the prior version. They added that after September 2006, and that was a substantive change and a change the absence of which Mr. Klein was entitled to rely upon.
Sounds to me like you're changing your argument.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. My argument is that
now,
the exception does not apply.
We'll have the record.
Okay. Thank you very much, Your Honor. Unless there's further questions, I'm sorry.
I have another question.
Yeah.
Let's assume that the regulation, the second day later regulation, does apply. Or doesn't apply, it makes no difference. Let's say, where is the prejudice in this case if, in fact, we would find that, well, there isn't a diagnosis of PTSD during this time, so it would make no difference under either the earlier or the later regulation?
The prejudice is that the regulation, either prior version or current version, requires reconsideration of the 1993 claim. The VA nor the board ever reconsidered the claim. That was prejudicial. They had an obligation to do it. They may well come up with a determination that there is no entitlement to an effective date for PTSD in 1993 or that the effective date would be 1996 based upon evidence. But that's based upon the reconsideration that is mandated. And that is the prejudice that results from the board's failure to correctly apply 3.156C.
So your argument is based upon the fact that the later version of the regulation applies or does not apply?
I do not believe that it applies, but if it applies,
okay,
it was incorrectly applied.
So they should, the board should then decide it under C1.
Correct.
The earlier version.
That's correct. Well, there was no C1, it was just C.
Okay.
Sorry.
So let's, again, if they decided under that, if they need to decide it under that, I'll ask the question again, why don't we remand it for determinations under that provision?
I hope I have not
go ahead. I know
confused
you're the
matter.
Same thing.
I absolutely agree that that is the appropriate remedy in this case.
Okay.
The application of a regulation that did not exist was not appropriate by the board, and that the extant regulation at the time in which the VA made its decision to assign the effective date was the prior version of 3.156. But in fairness, there simply is no case law at this point that clarifies that question, particularly in light of the ambiguity relative to CARNAS, and then how that does or doesn't apply with the principles under Princess Cruz. Unless there's further questions, thank you very much, Your Honors. I appreciate your attention.
Okay, the case is submitted. Let me say this before we greet counsel. I understand there are a number of interns in the here are present in the court today. So the court will, after greeting counsel, return to the roving room shortly and then return to the court to answer any questions that the interns may have. Counsel are certainly welcome to stay for that also. We'll greet counsel.